place to go. Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go.
Good morning, Chicago. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning. Steve, of course, coming back from Prague. His trip with the Blackhawks this weekend, but the gang is all here and we're ready to provide company. Ride shotgun through your morning routine. How about that? 312-981-7200 is our phone number. And happy Monday to all of you. Okay, great to see you guys. I hope you had a great weekend.
Yeah, I had a wonderful weekend. Did you?
Yeah.
It was fantastic. It was amazing.
The decorations, the Halloween decorations are up.
Yep.
Everybody's got them
out. Yep. I got the inflatables out.
Inflatables.
Why do I feel like you're being sarcastic? I have
one inflatable.
What
I think
is
if you
it?
Go one, it's a spider and it hangs down. And this is, we had a real issue this week. We have cobwebs that kind of spin from the spider and they kind of cover the yard. It's this huge thing, right? Well, I don't know if this year the production of those cobwebs was inferior, but they did not spread in the way that past years have.
They're hard to work with, aren't they?
They're hard to work
with. Yeah.
It wasn't a user error.
It was.
Are you sure?
Well, if you sound like my wife, I'm not gonna lie to you. There was a lot of tension and stress when I'm like, this isn't coming together, and she's like, I'm decided not to communicate. I'm just going to.
Do you know what it means when the women around you in your life all begin to sound like your wife? It means that your wife is right.
Yeah, she got nasty with me. She was mad at me. The whole thing. When there's stress and tension around cobwebs and Halloween decorations.
The holiday is supposed to be such a relaxing, happy time.
It's kind of like putting up wallpaper, you know, same thing.
So first the Bears lose, and then I got to put up with that. It was a double
trouble. Was that the sequence?
Yeah, that was the sequence.
Oh, okay.
So maybe it was
everybody was in a crappy
mood. You should have gone earlier.
Should have done it in the morning.
Well, you know, it was rainy, so like it's hard to do. That's the one thing about the Halloween decorations, because there's always some rain in October, and then they look a little worse for the wear.
And all the leaves get in the cobwebs. It's a whole thing. Well, around the corner from us is everyone. They've gone...
Yeah.
Bonkers.
It's like the Griswolds.
Yeah, the whole thing.
For Halloween, right?
I think there was a little more stress on us this year that we had to get it right. And when it started to go wrong, I felt like there were fractures in the foundation.
We have somebody in our neighborhood who has, like, literally every patch of grass. You can see it from one of the main arterial streets. Every patch of grass, their front lawn, is covered by an inflatable. And they must have, like, 20 of them.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point... There is something to be said for a little bit of subtlety,
don't
right?
you want to just go and pop them all?
No, that would be vandalism, Mary. I wouldn't do that.
No, but sometimes there's so many of them that it's just like,
it's a little overkill.
If they want to be joyous about the holiday, they have every right to do so.
They don't have to light up the whole neighborhood, though.
Mary went from zero to vandalism in one second. I love it.
That's why it's Vandeveld. Vandeveld stands for vandalism.
You just think about these things. Oh, come on. Like, you haven't thought about that ever?
It doesn't bother me. I'm just like, you know what? You need those characters in your neighborhood. You need that. So that way your kids have something to talk about. Hopefully they also are the same house that give out the full-size candy bars.
They better be. If they're doing all the inflatables, they better be.
Here's your text question. How much is too much?
How much is too much?
Yeah. I saw one with just zombies all over there, and that was really cool. I mean, there was bloody stuff. There was guillotine, and then there was a witch hanging upside down from the roof. It was really
scared. You scared of little kids.
I have in my head this the sort of bubbling up idea for a pitch for a sitcom, and it's to follow Mary around her neighborhood with a little thing of scissors.
What?
Where she's popping inflatables.
You guys think I would do that?
It's a sitcom. That's a reality show.
I'd watch that,
Dave.
Justin.
Known me way too long.
Zana should watch that. It just feels like we'll work with it. We'll talk, Mary. We'll work it out. We'll get all this.
Well, Halloween, you can be evil.
I went to change it to something happy and cuddly and furry. I went to visit a new kitten over the weekend.
Yeah, are you thinking about getting a kitten?
For my cat that I already own, who I feel like needs a companion.
Yep.
So, I thought cats don't need companions because they just like to, you know, cause their own.
I think it works. I think watching them play together, and I think that there is some value in the fact that if you're not at home, the two of them can play together.
This one was adorable.
Yeah.
And is one of the cats that has the little wobbly walking syndrome. So it has that disease where it kind of like it's not fully developed. With, so occasionally it'll just topple over.
I didn't know that.
Adorable. It's a thing. Check it on Instagram. Yeah.
Oh.
It's an adorable cat.
It's an adorable thing.
Yes. Extra adorable. Because it's like they're a little shaky on their feet.
An adorable cat disease.
No, but it's not progressive. Right, it's not going to, and it just makes them a little cuter, a little more special.
It just makes more likes on Instagram.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we got a great show lined up this morning. As always, Doc Mose is going to join us coming up after the 6:30 news. Hamp, of course, if he's still with us after yesterday.
After listening to the post game yesterday, I don't know if...
Did he like totally have a meltdown?
His head exploded. Yeah.
Also, Chef Eric Williams from Virtue, Candace Jordan will be here, Sister Helen Prejean will be here as well. So we've got a lot to do this morning, including the top 6 at 6, which we're going to get to.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
All right, let's get right to it. The Bears' London trip turned out to be a bust as the team lost 24-21. The offense and the defense struggled all game. Looked like they were hungover. Or worse, Dave, jet-lagged.
I don't think they were jet-lagged.
Can I start the controversy right now?
I don't think they were hungover.
I don't know. They looked it.
Dave, I watched every minute of it.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that was tough to do.
Well, at least the second half was a little more exciting.
Well, you know, they gave themselves a chance to win, and then... The defense just looked gassed at the end.
Yeah.
And they still move the ball across midfield, and then Daniel throws the pick, and that sealed it.
It seems like in the Matt Nagy regime, you can expect close games. That's one thing. One way or the other, you could dominate a game and still only be up 6 points, or you could play like just garbage.
I think that's the way the NFL is now. I mean, I think really a lot of times it's the team with the ball last. Unless you're the Jets, unless you're Washington, unless you're to this point.
There was just this one throw. It looked like it was being thrown to like three of members of the opposing team.
That was the final interception. Yeah. It was a bad read.
It's like, what is he looking at?
Well, it was also, and Matt Nagy said this morning that he had a news conference a little while ago in London, and he said it was Daniel, yes, he read it wrong, but also Anthony Miller probably cut his route a little short. So if he had taken it a little higher, they might have, at least he might have been able to knock it down and let them live another day.
I just know that I was really craving a Guinness and fish and chips during the entire game.
Okay. Why is that different from other Bears games?
Well, just because they were in London? Normally nachos and wings.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, at least they got the bye week, and maybe Mitch will be back.
There are a lot more Bears fans there, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true, true. A second whistleblower has come forward to add to the allegation that President Trump had used the power of his office to ask for foreign help in his reelection campaign. The president denies this, and it says it's his job to root out corruption. Last night, he went as far as to tweet that it's Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff who should be impeached, tried for high crimes because they are the ones who committed treason. Ooh, and they're throwing the capital T word around.
Yeah.
A lot of treason on Twitter.
Well, he's very good in that way. Like, if he gets accused of something, he's very good in terms of, like, throwing it right back at whoever's accusing him.
Well, we'll see. I think it's going to be a big week for all that stuff. But I thought it was going to be a big week last week, and it just turned into so much mud throwing. By the end of it, it's so hard to even know, especially after watching the Sunday talk shows, which way is up.
Yeah, and this one is different just from a news standpoint. They say this whistleblower has firsthand knowledge of that phone call. Remember, the first whistleblower
was secondhand. Yeah. And they used that against the whistleblower, saying it's just secondhand. Now they got a firsthand. Yeah, we'll see what happens. But we kind of already know what the call was, so I'm not sure if it matters if you have first or secondhand, because they put the transcript out. But we'll see how that kind of plays out. All right, next. The White House announced that American forces will set aside, sort of move out of the way in northern Syria and let Turkey plan an invasion. Why is this significant? Because the Kurds in the area, our allies, who played a huge role in defeating ISIS, are rivals with Turkey, and the Turkish want them wiped out. They're saying that President Trump betrayed them with this move. That's what the Kurds are saying this morning. So it's a very interesting move because we have allied with so many different groups in that area, and in this case, we use the Kurds to really fight on the front lines with ISIS. Yeah, I mean, they're the ones that you could look at and say they snuffed out ISIS in that area, and they have had a long-standing problem with Turkey, and they know that the invasion means Turkish forces are just going to annihilate them.
As you said, so all the articles are saying that the Kurdish group has considered long to be the most reliable partners in Syria, and you would think with all the tumultuous chaos that's going on in the Middle East at any given time that we want to keep as many.
Well, I want to hear from the president today to find out what the reasoning is behind it, because I understand that. I think it's great to not be involved in invasions moving forward, and I do agree with
but
the president.
But you also can't, in that regard, just completely pull out if you've made,
And in this case, they're not even pulling out; they're just kind of moving to the side and letting Turkey come in. So I don't know what the deals were made behind closed doors. So we'll see. So next, the Joker broke October box office records.
Did you go and see it?
I did. Yeah.
Okay.
It made over $90 million this week, and no incidents except at the AMC theater in downtown Chicago, where two men were arrested without incident for talking loudly and smoking, which sounds benign, but
the
way they did
it,
here's what they did. This is ridiculous. I read down, they started about halfway, got real intense about three quarters through, and they stood up and they started talking loudly. And then they started smoking, and they were blowing it in people's faces.
So they were drunk or high or something. They must have been.
I'm sure they were, but at the same time, what a ridiculous thing to do regardless of the movie. You should be arrested on sight. Citizen's arrest! I would have jumped over the seat, had him down on the ground.
That's completely over the top, but I also see you as somebody, no excuses for these people, ridiculous, but I also see you as somebody that probably gets annoyed if someone's crunching on popcorn next to you.
No, I don't. My wife does. But I will say this. The guy who sat next to me when I saw the Joker decided to bring his dinner.
What?
Yeah, he pulled out the chopsticks and started eating Thai food.
Why did it have to be chopsticks, Justin?
I'm just saying.
Why did it have to be chopsticks?
No, I'm just, it's a scented aroma that comes off of Thai food that I love. Don't get me wrong. I love Thai food, but I'm not sure I love it when I'm sitting watching a...
First of all, how did he sneak it in? Usually in his man purse?
Yeah, I don't know.
What? Usually, because women, we can sneak in a lot of
I always
snacks.
Bring my own water and everything.
A lot of these theaters now, you can get a full service menu anyway.
I always did
was
the
not
Davis
one of those
theaters.
Oh, okay.
Well,
at least
was,
you weren't on a plane.
Yeah, I was just annoyed because I'm like everyone is.
I had a couple of friends to go see it on Friday, and they told me, "Gee, don't go see it," because they were just depressed for the rest of the week.
It's a pretty.
It was a very depressing.
I really enjoyed it, but
my friends just described it as seeing somebody kind of go down the mental. Like the rabbit hole of mental, disease.
When we were done with the film, my son, who did not come with, at 12 years old, the next day, they have all these YouTubers have the ending explained and all that kind of stuff. So he forced me to watch 20-minute videos with YouTubers going, and here's the thing. Was it real? Was it not real? Like all this kind of stuff. I'm like, oh my gosh, man. It's like, and there's millions of hits on this stuff.
So Dean gave it an A, right?
Yeah.
So what did you
give
it?
I give it an A. I'm not much of a film critic.
You were really looking forward to
this. Yes, I thought it was great.
Psyched about it.
I will say this. If I watch Heath Ledger's performance or I watch any Batman movie that has ever since, and I apply this backstory to it, this is the origin story of the Joker, and I apply it to Heath Ledger, it makes the Joker make more sense.
But is it confusing because it's not in the comic book world, as everybody...
No, because...
it's very
I think that's misinterpreted because the Joker in time has always had has had multiple backstories. DC and comic books lore has created multiple backstories for him. So to add one more...
In the weeds because I don't know all that.
No, but it's one of the more mysterious characters of all time. So there's so many ways that to interpret who he was and his backstory. So anyway, it was a great film. I liked it, but the guy sitting next to me, not cool. All right. Celebrity death. Rip Taylor, the confetti comedian, was a force, a huge presence on television, hosting shows, being hilarious on game shows and late night talk shows. He was 84. What a great way to use YouTube today. Look up Rip Taylor. Some of the stuff he used to do on late night talk shows with Johnny Carson or even before that with some of the game shows. He's the best, one of the best. And it's sad that we lost him at the age of 84. So RIP, Rip. All right. And locally, we'll end here. Richard Pfeiffer died this weekend at 70 years old. Pfeiffer was a gay rights advocate in Chicago who had coordinated the Pride Parade since 1974. He was in charge of it. 45 years. He's in the LGBT Hall of Fame. Huge loss for the gay community. Richard Pfeiffer, dead at the age of 70.
Nice, nice, nice man. I interviewed him a number of times for stories, and the energy for Chicago and the gay community was unmatched.
Yeah, tough loss for Chicago as the gay community mourns a man who spent 45 years. Yeah. Wow. All right, that's your top 6 at 6.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Call Dr. Morse right now. Doc Morse, Doc Morse, Doc Morse, Doc Morse, Doc Morse, Doc Morse.
Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN, the highlight of any Monday morning, and that's the ability to talk to Doc Morse. Of course, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their their pursuit of better health care. Doc Morse, good to talk to you. It's Justin. How you been?
Justin, I've been great. How about yourself?
Good, man. Good. I miss talking to you every Monday morning and learning more about what's happening in medicine and in healthcare. So it's great to get a chance to talk with you today.
Yeah, always nice talking to you.
All right, so let's get right into it. There's so much that's about getting healthcare at home, and we've seen this, or at least starting to change the way we do look at healthcare when it comes to urgent care. Obviously, you know, we've seen more and more of these sort of urgent cares pop up instead of the emergency room. But there seems to be a change in the way that healthcare is being provided to us. No longer do we have to go to the big hospitals; they're sort of coming to us.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think you're going to start to see this change pretty much across the country of how we look at traditional medicine and how we look at that traditional doctor-patient relationship and how it's going to change. You know, we knew that Amazon, Berkshire, and Chase, when they put this little company together, it kind of sent a ripple through the healthcare industry saying, I wonder what they're going to do. And we know CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, they're all starting to get into this. You know, they've all mentioned it, and now we're starting to see what their plan is, and it should shake up the world a little bit as far as healthcare is delivered.
Well, we know we've seen the way that emergency care has moved to these small. You can't go a block without seeing an urgent care anywhere in any town anymore. So we've seen that kind of happen. Is it the same vibe here, where instead of having to wait to see your primary physician, you're going to find these sort of pop up kind of places that will take care of your needs? Maybe not your emergency needs, but just your everyday needs.
Yeah. So you've seen a lot of these convenient care, urgent cares pop up, and again, it's getting to convenience. I can't predict when I'm going to get sick, so when I get sick and I call my doctor's office, if he doesn't have an appointment and he says he'll see me in 3 days in the middle of the day, I say, well, wait a second, I'm sick now and I don't want to take a day off. So you're seeing the advantage of these pop-up, I shouldn't say that because a lot of them have been here for a while, but the convenient care, urgent care for those acute care problems. I can walk in there after work. I can walk in there before work. I don't have to take a day off, and I'm going to see a doctor, and he's going to take great care of me. But I lose that doctor-patient relationship.
Yeah,
doctor. We still hope that continues for chronic care, but now you're starting to see changes. I'm sorry, G, I stepped on you.
No, it's okay. Sorry, I thought you were finished. I'm wondering kind of along those lines what like the short-term and long-term ramifications of this would be. I'm guessing there are a lot of people that probably don't go and get their annual checkup when they need to. So now I wonder if they'll think, well, I can go walk in and see a doctor whenever I need to. I can push off that, you know, annual appointment even more.
100% right. You know, a lot of people, when they would come in for their bronchitis or something, the doctor, the nurse would say, oh, by the way, you need to schedule your annual. Well, if they're not there for those acute problems, they're not reminded of that annual. And those people with high blood pressure and diabetes, they might still be coming in for their regular checks, and they may get their annual, but the importance of that annual physical to identify chronic illnesses, I think we're going to start to miss out on more.
Why do you think this is happening? I get the idea that, you know, we've seen an overabundance of, I guess, reliable or unreliable when it comes to doctors saying, hey, it takes 3 days to get in and that kind of thing. Is it just capitalism at its best, where we're finding different ways to relook at how we do healthcare?
Yeah, I think you're going to look at this and go, wow, I can't believe it didn't happen before. You put smart people together and you say, okay, well, tell me a trillion-dollar industry that's highly inefficient and must be used by every person in the country. And you'd say, well, healthcare. So now you have these smart companies saying, wait a second, we can probably deliver it at a lower cost with just as good an outcome and a great patient experience. So that's why we're going to see this kind of turned on its head in just you know, look at what some of these companies are doing, and you're going to see what the big changes are.
Hmm. Yeah, I just wonder about it because, you know, there always has been a premium put on your relationship with your primary care physician, and that has to do with they know you and that they can say, okay, something didn't work, or that relationship is almost of currency. How does that get replaced? Because I would assume at urgent care or one of these, if you had these pop-up kind of places, that it becomes less about the person, more about the brand.
Absolutely. And you hit it right on the head there. It's more about the brand, and you're starting to see these brands. You know, you're starting to see companies that said, wow, we've already proven that we can step into this acute world. You know, you talk about the minute clinics at CVS and the walk-in clinics at Walgreens and the walk-in clinics at Walmart. You know, they said, well, we've already shown that we can do this part. Why don't we now, since we have this footprint, expand and get into that chronic side of it? And the bad thing is, you do lose that relationship because now it is about the brand. I will now be a CVS patient. I can go to any CVS store for my care.
So, Doc, do you think there's going to be good incentives for, you know, health professionals to go work for a big brand like CVS versus maybe a smaller clinic or a hospital?
Yeah, and it's a great question, G, because you're starting to see a population of physicians right now that are starting to say, wait a second, do I want to work as hard as the doctors who worked before me? Do I want to really take the risk of having my own office? That's why you're seeing a lot of doctors join big medical groups, because they don't want to do the hiring, the firing, the HR, the rental of the building. Exactly. They want to practice medicine. And a lot of these companies now are going to allow them to say, you know what, you come in and practice medicine. That's what you love. Don't worry about the business side of it. Take good care of the patients.
Do you think as this becomes more prolific and you see that it's going to be brands instead of doctors, do you think that'll have an impact on how Washington looks at healthcare? You know, there's so much going on with the election when it comes to whether we're going to have healthcare for all or Medicare, whatever it might be. Do you think that this will have an impact on how politicians kind of deal with this?
Yeah, you're going to have two main focuses. One is the politicians, because they're going to try to look to say, how can we lower the cost of Medicare and Medicaid? Because we really see that this is inefficient. There's a lot of fraud there. How can we make that more efficient from that side? And the other big side is going to be large companies are going to start looking at this as well, because they're seeing their health insurance premiums go up 10, 12, 14% every year, and they're not seeing a benefit of healthier patients in their workplace. So you're going to see both those sides of it start to squeeze this this balloon, and that's how you're going to start to see these changes.
Doc Most joins us every Monday here on the Steve Cochran Show. Doc, stick around. We're going to take a quick break. Come back, talk about hospital care at home. It's an interesting way to think about the future of healthcare when it pertains to in-home care. We'll have that conversation, continue that conversation. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning as he comes back from Prague. On the line with us, Doc Most. Doc, before we move on to hospital care at home, we're getting texters that are texting in, and one of the things that continually recurs in the text is just about, with a private practice doctor, they take their time. And they might give you more time than might happen at a CVS or Walmart or places like that. Is that accurate? Do you believe that you're going to see that change as well, where CVS will give the time, or is it going to be in and out, in and out, in and out?
No, I think that they're going to try to look at the inefficiencies, and one of the inefficiencies is how much time. So you're going to start to see, I think, more in and out, in and out. You know, they are, when you don't have that personal relationship, you don't sometimes, you know, find those subtle signs and say, you know what, something seems to be bothering you. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Mm. Or, you know, the patient doesn't feel as comfortable to bring up a sensitive topic. So I think you are going to see that. That's the beauty of that doctor and patient relationship, is the doctor gets to know the patient. He understands them. He feels, you know, what's going on. And the patient feels comfortable saying, you know what, I've trusted you with my life for the past 10 years, and I want to talk about some things that may be difficult to talk about.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Let's talk about hospital care at home. What is this concept? Because we all know about the idea of hospice, and we know about the idea of having care at home. That's something that has been there. You know, have actually bring nurses into the house. But this is even going a step further.
This is. So this is really, Johns Hopkins is the one that started this, and it started it a couple of years ago. And they started looking at patients, and they studied how much time the nurse was actually with the patient in the room and how much care that the patient actually was delivered by nursing care. And what they figured out is they said, wow, there's a subset of patients that are sick enough to be in the hospital, but we can actually care for them at home. So we can have a nurse come in the morning and give them their first dose of medicine. We have technology that can take their vitals. We have technology where we can have a telemedicine watch the individual. Mm-hmm. And they've shown that, boy, we have better outcomes. Patients feel better because in the comfort of their home, their dogs, their pets are around them, their families around them. So when you start to look at the cost of healthcare in the hospital, and if we can deliver the same care at home, you're going to see a dramatic change in how healthcare is delivered.
And that's a huge part of the cost of healthcare is when you get on a hospital stay and it's more than one night and you're occupying a bed, the costs just roll up. I mean, this amazing amount of money it costs to be hospitalized.
Absolutely. You know, the costs roll up, and, you know, you look at these big hospitals, there's a lot of overhead, and some of that overhead has to be charged because of the inefficiencies of the hospital as well. I'll give you a perfect example, medications. You've probably seen or heard stories of a bill, boy, they charged me $1.25 for one single Tylenol. Well, you have to do that to cover the cost of the hospital. You're starting to see insurance companies now saying, you know what, don't worry about it. You know, we're going to take care of you at home, and that expensive antibiotic, there's going to be no markup because we, the insurance company, are going to provide the medication. We're not even going to go through the hospital for that. So you're going to see anything we can do to lower the cost of healthcare and make it more convenient for the patient.
Now, we've seen with hospital care, a lot of, flip the coin, a lot of it is that they're there for emergencies. If something goes wrong, if there's any sort of emergency that has to happen, nurses run in, doctors are there. How do they handle that part of it if it's at the home?
Yep, that's the part that they're going to have to choose the right subset of patients. And in some of those patients, you know, they have some patients actually, let's say, heart problems, right? Well, some people actually have defibrillators already built into them. They have, you know, they're in their body already. So some of those patients, we could probably even stretch the envelope a little bit. But they're going to be more careful and say, boy, this is that pneumonia patient who's somewhat healthy, but boy, he doesn't need to be in the hospital for 3 days for his pneumonia to be treated because all we're really doing is giving him antibiotics. So then the insurance company can say, well, you know what, we'll provide the antibiotic. And matter of fact, we'll send the nurse to give that to them as well at the home. So I think we're going to start to see more and more people get pushed that way. You're hearing now about patients that are going home a lot sooner, and they're still getting IV antibiotics. They're still getting medications at the home. What Hopkins is saying is we don't even need to have those first couple days, possibly. We might be able to do it all at home.
Now, when you start talking about this, the common sense thought is that this would be cheaper. But I also can see them saying, well, this is a concierge service. This is something that's a little bit more than we have to come out to you, that the cost might be actually more. Do you see it that way, or do you see this as just a cheaper alternative?
It will be a lower cost alternative. The insurance companies will push for this because they know that the cost will be lower in their home. So, yeah. You know, it's what everybody's looking at. You know, look what Amazon is doing for their employees now. You know, trying to control those costs and make sure that they deliver everything they possibly can to their patients to lower those costs, make it more convenient, and hopefully have the same outcomes. Healthcare is very inefficient, and we're starting to see what's going to happen here in the next 5-10 years.
Doc Most, let's take a call. Let's take a call from Mary. She's on line one. Mary, what's your question for Doc Most?
Hi. My battery is going to die out. Dr. Most, I want to ask you, I'm a Medicare patient, and most recently I experienced going to an emergency room at a hospital, and I was one of many Medicare patients who was diverted to an observation area for days at a time. And my ailment was kind of minor compared to other Medicare patients who were diverted to this observation area. So is this something that Medicare is doing where they're, you know, screening us out from the hospital as opposed to going into observation? Yeah. And I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay. Sure.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Yeah, so Mary makes a very good point. When Medicare patients come in, they're either put into observation or they're put in as what we call an inpatient. Medicare would like to have everybody in observation because the cost is shared then between the patient and Medicare. whereas if they're inpatient, the more of the cost is covered by Medicare. So this is exactly why you're starting to see hospital at home, you're starting to see these, because they want to lower their costs. Well, in order to lower their costs, they want to shift it back, some of that back to the patient, back to the hospital. Mm-hmm. So we are starting to see more being put into observation status, which, you know, is not good for the patient, that's for sure.
Okay, last question just about, obviously Johns Hopkins is doing this, but when do you see this kind of thing coming to Chicago and being used routinely?
Oh, very soon. Very soon. I think you're going to start to see health systems start to ramp up and look at the technology that we have that can monitor the patients at home, and this will be something that you'll see within the next, I would say, year to 2 years.
All right. Dr. Kevin Most, always a pleasure, Doc, to talk with you on a Monday morning. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
You got it. Take care, Justin.
There you go. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Okay, coming up, Dan Hampton's going to join us, I hope. Boy, oh boy.
Oh, he will. He
was on fire yesterday. Everything he said was right, though.
Here's how you introduce him. Here's Hamp. And just let him go.
Let's see if he's still riled up from that.
Oh, he will be.
Oh, my gosh. Yesterday, he and OB and Kaz, they were upset with the Bears' performance.
Upset?
And I think that that's probably an understatement. That's a very calm word.
That's a vast understatement.
That's a calm word I use there. But we'll talk with Hamp about what happened in London yesterday. And a little bit later in the show, Blackhawks tickets to give away. And this is great for the home opener coming up this week.
Thursday.
How about it? Get them back here. Get this season started in the right way. Get them out of Prague. Get them back to Chicago. That's what we're going to do.
Good idea.
All that coming up right now on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Each person, every coach, every player, it's time to start looking at themselves in the mirror and figuring out why you're out there.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
Camp sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. The Bears yesterday lay an egg in London, losing to the Raiders 24-21. At the half, they were down 17-0. I would say one of the more uninspired performances by the Chicago Bears in the Nagy tenure. Something about that game yesterday, they were run over defensively. Offensively, they looked confused. They did not look prepared for the game that was happening in London.
I'd say that 17-0 was misleading. I think it felt more lopsided than 17 points.
Let's bring in Hamp right now. Hamp, you can hear, of course, in the pre- and post-game here on WGN Radio with OB and Kaz. What a game yesterday, Hamp. I don't know what to make of it. Do you agree with the assessment that they looked like they were underprepared?
No, it was bloody awful. I just got to tell you, the whole thing from top to bottom, it stunk. And so much of the time, you kind of get lost in the big picture and, oh, well, you know, this is, you know, we're this, we're that. This team is still searching for an identity. And that's supposed to be kind of established way, way, way back there, August, early September. We're approaching the middle of October. In the bye week, we still don't know, you know, what's going on with this football team. But all that being said, you got to stand back and say, wow, there were some good things. You know, you get down 17-0. I don't care if it's against Sisters of the Poor. You got to get things turned around, and we were able to do that. Now, the Raiders kind of helped us. They weren't inept in the third quarter. But the reason the Raiders won that game, it wasn't because Trubisky wasn't in or Chase Daniel hadn't. Our offense and defensive line got their butts kicked from the opening whistle most of the game until the very end. And the one thing that everybody needs to kind of look at, and Matt Nagy, you know, we've heard a lot about trouble with whistleblowers over the last couple of weeks, where we got trouble with our whistleblower. I'm talking about our head coach. You know, he wants to stand up there and say, oh, well, we all need to look in the mirror. No, you need to look in the mirror back in August before the season starts, because once it starts, you are who you are because of the insane rules that the NFLPA has put in now. You can't practice. You can't kind of recreate yourself in October. You got to do that in training camp. Well, we opted not to do that. We opted not to play in the preseason. So we are who we think we are. Now, at some point, we got to find a way to pull out of this, and that means the defensive line, offensive line, they need to get in gear because we don't have, you know, a Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or name somebody, Gardner Minshew, that is able to pull it out of their you-know-what and make things happen. Now, all that being said, we had a lead in the fourth quarter. Where's this so-called greatest defense we've ever seen, right? Think about this. In the last six games, this defense has given up the lead in the fourth quarter on long touchdown drives. I'm not talking about, you know, an interception return or fumble return or, you know, a fluke. I'm talking about a 97-yard drive by a nobody Oakland Raider team yesterday that we just got bent backwards.
Yeah, and I agree.
At some point, you got to just say, we are not who we think we are. We better start figuring out who we are.
When you have a 10-minute differential in time of possession in the first half, how much of that do you think accounts for the problems they had stopping the Raiders on that final drive? Or is that just an excuse? I don't know. I mean, you've been out there in those situations.
You know, we used to have, a lot of the situations where, you know, Buddy would kind of put the cheese on a cracker, and he'd say, hey, you know what? The reason you're out there on that field all day is because you ain't doing your job. You ain't stopping them.
Right.
And at some point, it falls back. And, you know, Khalil Mack, you can say whatever. He's had an amazing impact on this team. He changed a lot of what, you know, our defensive capabilities were last year, this year on a number of plays. But at some point, you know, you got to swell up and be great when you need to be great. And you're being paid a lot of money, and you know, Akeem Hicks is down. Roquan Smith is stumbling around like he doesn't know where he's at. Somebody needs to step up and make a play. Oh, wait a minute. He was on the sidelines most of, you know, that last drive. Yeah. I don't understand it. I refuse to accept it. But at some point, you know, the defense has to say, hey, we think we're so great and all that in the bag of chips. Well, we better stop somebody when we need to stop them. We had the lead. They gave it up. You got to look right at the defense.
Hey, Hamp, you see a little bit of conspiracy theories just about the idea of Nagy bringing the team to London so late in the week where Gruden brought him in on Monday. And you saw on the field they looked a little hungover. They looked like they weren't sort of bringing that extra energy. Do you put any stock into the idea of the decision to bring the team to London so late in the week?
No. In a way, I understand it. You know, talking with Dave Wannstedt, on Thursday, he was talking about when he went over, and he said, hey, you know, you don't understand. They don't really have the facilities. I remember there was a picture going around, and I think I sent it to you, Mr. Cat.
You did, yes.
With Walter Payton talking to Phil Collins. Where we were practicing was like in a pasture, and there were some cows in the next field, and that's where we practiced. Well, you know, why go over a week early where you don't have the facilities for treatment, for film study, all those different things? So, you know, here's the deal. Are we going to treat this team like men and what we, you know, should expect from them? Or are we going to act like they're a bunch of kids that, you know, oh, they can't kind of get on their body clocks on the right schedule, being there 3 days before kickoff? Now, remember, that was not a 6 a.m. kickoff. It was a 6 p.m. So you can say all you want about, you know, oh, well, they didn't. Hey, you want to feel sorry for somebody? Feel sorry for the Raiders. They'll go 48 days without playing a home game. And yet, you know what? I didn't hear one of them whining and crying about that. So I don't want to hear about this, you know, jet lag thing.
So, Hamp, any positives you can take away from the game? Anybody that we need to be watching out for that you think has a lot of promise and potential?
Absolutely. Hey, Sherrick McManus makes the play of the game, punching the ball out of the goal line to give us a chance. Now, what about this? Allen Robinson. I mean, if he is the best receiver we have ever had here in Chicago. Wow. I'm sorry if that hurt somebody's feelings. But, you know, Chase Daniel did not play horribly. He had two bad picks, and those are characteristic of the last one was almost desperation and being unprepared where your receiver doesn't know where to go. And the other one, hey, the guy's not very tall. He didn't see the linebacker. Okay. But he got us back in the game. He made a lot of cool, wonderful throws. Both of those throws to Allen Robinson in the end zone for touchdowns, not counting all the other ones that he made, were of the elite category. I'm just telling you. Trubisky can't throw those. So there's a lot of stuff that you can look at. But when you look at the offensive line, Leno, the left tackle, playing like Jay Leno, had three more penalties. Now he's the most penalized guy in the league. Our offensive line got their heads caved in from start to finish. So, you know, there's some good stuff. But this team is supposed to be a whole lot more than that. And right now, they don't have an identity. So maybe over the next 2 weeks, they'll find one. While they're on the bye week.
There you go. The bye week coming up here. Ham sponsored by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Dan Hampton, thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Steve Cochran Show to break down the Bears' loss. Appreciate it.
All righty. Go Bears.
Go Bears. How about that, though?
Glad he's in one piece.
Yeah. He's so right, though. Allen Robinson has just been impressive. I know the Bears lost that game, but they're in it because Allen Robinson is making plays that a lot of receivers in Bears history did not.
Still, that's a pretty strong statement from Hamp, who's seen a lot of wide receivers in Bears history. But he's, you know, if you think about it, it hasn't been a position of strength, and partly because quarterback hasn't been a position of strength for the Bears either.
Yeah. Hamp, it's tough. I mean, can you imagine personally disappointing him? I wouldn't be able to live with myself.
Oh, we all do every week.
I was going to thank him for cleaning up the kitchen and the food, but I was afraid.
Steve Cochran Show rolling along here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve. He's coming back from Prague. Getting some good stuff on Instagram. Good to see him walking around.
They stormed the castle.
He said he was. He dropped a couple times in that interview on Friday that he walked so much, miles, four or five miles, letting us know that he's being active.
Well, he's probably moseying about.
Yeah.
He doesn't walk fast.
That's right. He moseys.
He's back tomorrow on this program. Steve Cochran will be back. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Coming up, we're going to talk with Choose Chicago. They've got a big announcement they're making this morning about tourism. We'll have that conversation. Also, we're giving away Blackhawks tickets. Who doesn't like Blackhawks tickets and Blackhawks math?
Are we going back to that?
I've got a formula in which to pick the right caller. And it's a lot. It's like calculus level.
Did you rip this off from Jason Benetti? Is this like socks math?
No, he ripped it off from
Hawks
me.
Math.
Come on. Benetti's like, he's like, I need new ideas. He's like, oh, they're doing Hawks math. Maybe I'll do socks math instead.
Poor Joe. Does he get it? Does he understand it? The new formula?
He gets it, yeah. I show my math, right? I show my work.
Show your work, yes.
Yeah. I know right now my son is in seventh grade, and seventh grade math is turning into like, exactly where you kind of drop off as a parent. When you start getting into word problems and algebra and all that kind of stuff, that's the point when you're like, this can't be done in the head anymore.
Right.
And I'm just like, uh-oh, what am I doing now? I mean, I don't have no... He'll be like, Dad, can you take a look at this? I'm like, yeah. It's like I have trauma going back to high school of like, I don't know which way how fast the plane's going and which train is going which way on time. I don't know.
Those were the worst questions. Oh, dear.
And then when it says show your work, those are the three most evil words. I thought, oh, no, please. Can I just guess A, B, C, or D?
I know. I feel bad because I want to be,
choice.
As a parent, you want to be the source in which your kid can come there and you have the answers for them.
Right.
In this case, I don't have them. Not even remotely close. My best guess will be in the wrong direction, and he will get a bad grade.
Well, I mean, all my life, everyone thought I was good at math, you know? And as an Asian American, everyone thought, oh, that's the girl that I want to be in study group with. And little did they realize that I was terrible at math. I am the anti-stereotype. I was always great at, English and grammar and literature and never with the math stuff. So that'd always be this big disappointment.
Yeah, and they're like an Algebra 2 class. You're like, I guess I'll go with G. I'll go with G.
Yeah, go with G. A lot of hands raised to be in my group. And no,
that's terrible.
Sorry.
Nope, the joke's on them. right?
Totally, right? Totally. I'm doing my part to help with break down the positive stereotypes against Asian Americans. There you go.
Dean Richards coming up as well, as Sister Helen Prejean is going to join us. She, of course, the author of Dead Man Walking, and the opera is coming to the Lyric Opera in November, so we'll have Helen on. That's great.
I'm super excited. Also, we're going to have Chef Eric Williams of Virtue Restaurant in Hyde Park, and he was just recently listed as 16 Black Chefs That Are Changing Food in America.
All right. How about that? A great Steve Cochran show lined up today. And we'll get to it. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on 720 WGN. All right, coming up here right after the news, we're going to talk about how a new Reader's Choice Award has voted Chicago the best large city in the United States, better than New York City.
Wow.
Take that. Any day I'd take that.
Take like that, bring back, New York. I'd take like to, that, the yeah. Big Apple.
Let's bring back that New York-Chicago rivalry, right? It's always good. But yes, we'll talk with you, Chicago, about that report that just came out this morning. And also, like I said, Dean Richards coming up as well. And I got to talk softball. We got softball to talk about as well, too. Big game tonight. Big WGN radio game tonight. Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in for Steve. He's back tomorrow. We've got Blackhawks tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to Chicago Blackhawks versus the Columbus Blue Jackets on Friday, the 18th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heatings, Air Conditioning and Plumbing. For the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. So that's tickets to give away for the Blackhawks and the Blue Jackets on Friday, October 18th. Let's think here. All right, so Dylan Strome is number 17, right? So he's number 17. Mm-hmm. So let's take those two numbers, 1 and 7.
Yeah.
Let's add them together and then make them 8.
8.
But then, you know what? For fun, let's divide them by 2 because it's a... So then they're down to 4.
And
then the Blackhawks would have 3 championships here, 3 Stanley Cups.
So you're going to add 3 to it?
That's 7. That's 7.
And then... And then 7, and then add 17. Let's do 7th caller. 312-981-7200. 7th caller. I think it's perfect. That was perfect math. Maybe I do have it in me.
You have it in you to help your son.
I think I do.
You could take 7, divide it by 2, and add 3.
Yeah.
And then
round up. Right.
And you get back to 7.
It is funny, too, because I was a cashier. I was a cashier at the Omni, at the which was a Dominick's Superstore back in the day. And my strength was...
Did you do it by hand?
I would do it by hand. I would be... I could make change. I was good at that.
That's a skill.
And it was funny because I started as a stock guy, right? That's how you kind of get in there.
Wow, you moved up. Mm-hmm.
Well, what they say is, what people didn't recognize, if you just took the test, the cashier's test, which was all about how many quarters and dimes and nickels make 85 cents or whatever it is, and they would move you up, and it was $1.50 more an hour.
Wow. Just for doing the change in your head.
Right. So I did
the change.
Yeah, I did the change. Amazing. I passed the test and I was became an idiot savant when it came to how much change you could when it was, you know, you needed to make 85 cents.
You can catch me actually counting on my fingers. I mean, many, many times. I'm like, wait a minute.
So you had this promising career. What happened to you?
I know. I made a terrible decision in my life. I was like, you know, I'm going to move to Chicago. And I was like, why'd you do that? Why did you move? You should have stayed, and I could have been
I could have been head cashier. Pretty good.
Yeah. Or, Mary, you know, the better gig was service desk manager.
Ooh.
If you could move past head cashier and get to service desk manager, that's where you count. So you'd have to count your drawer out. I don't even know if the technology is the same anymore.
I've always wanted to do that.
So you'd count your drawer out, and you put it in a bag, and you give it to the cashier or to the customer service manager who was behind the glass, and they would count it again. And,
really?
And you'd see if there's any discrepancy. And so you'd inevitably there would be. There'd be like a quarter off, or in some cases like $35. And you're like, where'd that $35 go? And eating my sandwich.
I sold jeans at the Gap. They would not. I didn't have to count any money, thank goodness. It was just, hey, I think this would look good on you. High rise, five pocket.
Did you fashion yourself as like a fashionista where you're like, listen, this I know what high waisted is, and did you do a good job with that kind of stuff?
I try to. I mean, the crazy thing is people just want you to know what you're talking about.
Right.
They want to believe that you know what you're talking about. So you could just like, you know, as long as you're friendly and say, no, I think this pair would look great on you. Like, you're a little hippie there, and you're a little curvy. You have a really tiny waist. This could accent your waist. This is great. And this is going to eliminate the gap in the waistband.
Have you tried a boot cut? Let's try a boot
cut. Exactly. And I think skinny would work good on you.
I don't even try jeans on. What I do is I walk into the store, I beeline to the spot, I know the number of jean that I want, like from Levi's. Mm-hmm. I get it. I take it, and I take it to the cashier, and I'm out the door in 5 minutes. It's almost like I'm afraid of the process, and I go beeline to the spot.
Well, that means you must not fluctuate. No. See, like, my weight fluctuates, so sometimes this will work, and sometimes it won't.
No, as you can test, there are many times where the jean is wrong for me, but I don't care. Like, I get it home, and I'm like, this doesn't look right. This cut is wrong, but I'm like, I'll wear them for 8 months. I don't care.
You don't take it back?
I don't take them back. I never take him back.
Dave is pretty fashionable. Like, there's been a couple times I'm like, wow, he's wearing a skinny chino. Wow. Dave.
And look at Cochran now wearing jeans, too.
Everybody's got skinny look. Denim. It's a denim look on the Steve Cochran show.
And the mom jeans are back.
See what you
hike up the... If you navel pants.
Yeah, see, this hipsters. Is what G brings to the show. She's bringing the fashion.
Thank you, everyone. If you need help, with denim, let me know.
I'm more khaki than denim.
Yes, I said you were the chino type. Yes. You got some good Dockers, a little Bonobos.
Not Dockers.
Not Dockers.
No, not the Dockers. All right, so tonight, the WGN radio softball team is playing in the championship game.
Really? Congratulations. Yeah, it's the first time you've mentioned it in 2.5 hours.
I was just going to say.
Good job.
You don't say it. Never heard of that.
Unbelievable.
I've never heard
I'm
of
excited
this
about it, actually. I love the email.
It's. I'm very excited. We sent an all staff out on Friday to remind everybody to come out and support the team. And you know what I found out?
How did you get the boss to do that, by the way? I saw the email.
I know. I have restrictions. Forwarded. This company has restrictions on who can all staff.
Right.
And I'm not on the all staff. So when you can't put all staff in, Gene.
Thank
and then
goodness,
be like,
because you know what? You'd be sending us a reminder about this softball game every day.
So when I did it, I asked for permission to send the all staff, but then when I went to try and send it, they're like, no, you can't send this. So I had to go, and so I forwarded it to Mary, being like, can you send
this? I think Mary was smart. Mary's like, I'm not giving you the all staff.
Yeah.
Well. I mean, you're... No, we're just teasing you, because you have been...
It's not just me. You're teasing your coworkers as
you're
well.
Amped.
There are 11,
you're amped.
There are
I'm
11
excited.
12 people that are on this team that are ready to play tonight in Forest Park for the championship.
Are you going to carb up? What are you going to eat today? How are you going to have the energy to perform at your highest and the best?
I have to visualize. I have to play a little ping pong, and then I have to visualize myself in that moment.
And how many of them, again, are actual coworkers of ours?
There's, yeah, really.
Almost full on. There's probably a couple guys that do podcasts.
And some are former.
Well,
co-workers.
That makes them co-workers.
Former co-workers, right.
Okay.
So there's
still
a
counts.
There's a lot.
Now, you're also the coach, right?
I am the coach, yeah.
Okay.
Do you have to work tonight?
No, I don't. I have the night off.
Thank goodness.
This show, so I have it off so I can actually play in the championship. I'm very excited. I think I'm probably more excited that there's a concession stand in Forest Park. So we usually play in Mozart Park, which is one of the parks on the west side, and it's just diamonds.
Is there beer?
There's nothing.
Are you selling walking tacos?
Tonight they have a concession stand in Forest Park where it's right behind the 16th Hall of Fame.
Those are the best walking tacos. Then I'll come.
There's going to be nachos, soft serve ice cream. I'm not sure. There might be a licorice rope.
Oh.
What's a licorice?
What do you mean?
What's a
licorice? The long licorice.
Even I know that, and I would never eat it.
All right, you eat a Twizzler, Dave.
Nope.
No?
I love Twizzlers. Strawberry. All right.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we take our break here, and then we'll come back, and let's talk with Choose Chicago CEO David Whitaker about the news today that Chicago is the best large city in America when it comes to tourism.
We beat everyone.
We beat New York. Yes, we'll do that. And then we'll also we'll talk a little bit more about softball. We have to, right? We have to talk just a little bit.
Absolutely.
More. And then it's over.
I'm proud of you. I want you to talk about
your
accomplishments.
Thank you, G. I appreciate
that. The team's accomplishments.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Big news for Chicago tourism today. Condé Nast Traveler announced that its readers have voted Chicago the best large city in the United States. How about that? The Reader's Choice Awards, the longest running and most prestigious recognition of excellence in the travel industry. 3 years running for Chicago, beating out New York. Gee, we'll take that.
Absolutely.
How about that? David Whitaker is the president and CEO of Choose Chicago. He's on the line with us now. David, congratulations on this 3-year achievement.
Good morning, everyone. Yes, it's quite a special accomplishment, especially for everyone who's involved in the visitor and hospitality meetings industry here in Chicago. Something to be really proud of.
This is a reader's poll, but to win it 3 years in a row, why do you think Chicago continues to beat cities like New York and L.A. in this country?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I mean, the variety of experiences that we have to feature kind of matches the variety of whatever people are into. We're known for our great restaurant scene. We're known for our great theater scene. Our architecture is unrivaled. Our friendliness is always noted. It's a place where you feel at home when you're here. So really, the diversity of experiences, the equals the diversity of the kind of people that we're attracting here and who are obviously voting for Chicago.
It's pretty remarkable when you think about we don't always have the sunniest weather all year round. So people are still visiting us in the wintertime too, right?
Yeah, in fact, you know, we've seen real growth. And again, I think it speaks to whether it's a great restaurant experience or a great theater experience. Those are a great museum experience. Those things are pretty weather resistant. Clearly, there's nothing like the summer and fall in Chicago. We're experiencing that today. But we're a year-round destination. South Americans love to visit us. It's a reversed, you know, our summer is their winter and vice versa. So we're attracting record number of visitors from Great Britain. We've seen growth in obvious markets like China. But the biggest growth, 14% increase just in the last 3 years in U.S. major cities. Urbanites who love what they love in their cities but love to go to other cities where they have a little bit more time to recreate and play.
How much does Choose Chicago invest in making sure that when tourists come to Chicago, they see more than just downtown?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, our new mayor has made it a real priority to make sure that we're promoting and celebrating, you know, our neighborhoods, not for just places where people come to work, but places where people can go, historic sites, great restaurants. You know, we have over 250 theaters. This is the year of theater, in fact, in Chicago, and we have over 250 stages in our communities. Many of them are in the charming neighborhoods, so great restaurant scenes, places to walk, ride a bike. The diversity of our neighborhoods, again, gives us a real selling feature. We're not just known for one beach or one street. Mm-hmm. The variety of things to do really is what helps us attain being ranked number one for three consecutive years.
When you're ranked number one for 3 years, it feels like maybe you can rest on your laurels, but what can the city or what does the city have to do, especially to Chicago, to continue to keep tourism numbers where they're at?
Well, you know, we could have rested, not that that's what you implied, but we could have rested on our laurels after the first or second year. And you just have to keep working to invite the world here. It's an honor to be given these kind of acknowledgments, but it's really just a symbolic acknowledgement that increasingly people are aware of what's going on in Chicago. They have great experiences when they come here. They may have been here for a record-setting meeting or convention and then return with their family. So it's a variety of things we have to continue to do. You can never, it's a very competitive industry. You mentioned New York, you mentioned Los Angeles, Boston, some of the other top cities in the country would love to be ranked number one. We've got to just keep working every day to make sure that people are aware of what we have to offer and have a great experience when they're here. And like I said, this is a collective win for the entire visitor and meetings industry. We couldn't be more proud.
David Whitaker is the president and CEO of Choose Chicago, and for the third consecutive year, Condé Nast Traveler has named Chicago the best large city to visit. David, thanks for taking some time out this morning. We appreciate it.
We call that a three-peat.
Congratulations. There you go. All right. That's a great story for Chicago.
I think so. I mean, it really is. I always love taking visitors like to the neighborhoods because we have, you know, and we do have so many storefront theaters like all throughout. I mean, yeah. We probably have one of the best storefront theater scenes in the country, I think.
I find myself, I think I fall in that category of urbanites who like to go to other cities to visit. My wife and I do that for our travel all the time, you know, New York or L.A. or other places. We just went to Seattle and Portland. So I have this feeling every time I go to a newer area of Chicago or, you know, you're in the Fulton Market area or something like that, and you're like, if I was visiting, this would be amazing if I saw this. This would be great for
You forget how jaded you get, you know, because you're like, you get to experience this beautiful skyline or whatever, you know, whatever you get to experience every day becomes mundane, but it's not.
It's not. And it was funny because just this weekend, we were driving on Armitage and we had we're going to run errands, and there's a stop at Armitage in Sheffield. And I was at the light there. And when you look out, the brown line and the red line cross right there. And there was a train loading and people getting on and the streetscape that they had set up. And that's a famous shot for whenever you see a tourism video for Chicago because it says neighborhood. And I thought about the same thing. I'm like, if I were visiting this town, this would be an amazing thing to see.
Yeah. And hopefully eventually we can, you know, make sure that all the neighborhoods get the distribution of attention and wealth of resources they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. So. I'll tell you this. If I were bringing people to Chicago, I would have them check out the 16-inch Hall of Fame, 16-inch Softball Hall
of Fame. What's that?
I have no doubt you would.
the 16-inch softball Hall of Fame, of course. The
there really is one here?
There, oh, my gosh. It's the best thing in the world.
I've never heard of this before. Just, you're teaching me something.
16-inch softball, no gloves, the big ball, the mush ball, is traditional Chicago softball. It comes from Chicago.
Awesome.
And they have a 16-inch softball Hall of Fame, which is out in Forest Park.
Okay.
So our media league, which we play in, last year I went there. I put a suit on after we won our championship last year, and we did it like it was a White House visit to the 16.
Wow.
And they took us around and had awesome tour guides. And this year, after that relationship was set, we worked on trying to get the championship for our media league to be playing in the Field of Dreams diamond behind there.
Did they order McDonald's for you?
They did not order McDonald's for me. No.
Too bad.
No. But so tonight we play the WGN radio team plays the Chicago Reader in the Forest Park Diamonds. It's open to the public, 7,500. Harrison, George Bliss is on the line because he's doing play-by-play for us tonight. They're streaming it. They're streaming the broadcast.
Wow,
worldwide.
This is a major deal.
It'll be on. Where will it be, George? Where can we find where the stream will be?
Well, through the beauty of Facebook Live, which is taking over all the networks, I think.
Yeah, right.
GOV, our great play-by-play announcer, is going to be on the air. It's the Slow Pitch Softball Association. That's all you have to remember, Slow Pitch Softball Association. And Mr. Whitaker was right on the caller before me. Chicago is the best city because one of the reasons, of course, is this 16-inch softball, this Hall of Fame we have at 7500 West Harrison. And G, we want you to come out and see it, G.
Wow,
love it.
Thank you. Hello. I think I want to be part of the team. Maybe I could try to. Do you guys have open call tryouts?
Yeah.
Auditions?
We do actually. Come on out tonight and take a little batting practice. You don't mind, do you, Justin?
No, not at all. Right.
As a matter of fact, we're going to have two Hall of Famers instructing. You're going to have the great Israel Sanchez, Justin, as the guest coach in your bench. Great Israel Sanchez.
Awesome mustache. He's got a great mustache.
Right. And the Reader team is going to have none other than the pitching legend, Pat Caputo. So it's going to be unbelievable.
Honorary bench
live
coaches.
TV.
And the first pitch will be thrown out by none other than Rokan. Rokan is
fantastic.
Coming out throughout
the We're ready for Roe. We're going to take a look at him. We're going to see if he's available for next year's draft because I know he's a hell of an athlete. So
now
it's all good.
Where does Justin rank in terms of the best softball players that you've seen?
Mm. Well, I think he's kind of like in low A ball at this point. There's A, there's double A, there's triple A, and then there's me. But, you know, a lot of people on the major league teams, our great Sox team covered by WGN, guys have made up two levels in 1 year. It can be done.
All right.
It could be like Moncada, maybe.
I'll take it, buddy. George Bliss will be out there tonight in Forest Park.
Yep.
We got to run to get to the news. George, thank you so much for checking in and telling us
to
find the stream. Appreciate it.
Don't be nervous, buddy. Just hit the ball hard. See you guys.
Love it. He's telling me how to visualize. Visualize the ball. The news is next for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on 720 WGN.
We're talking baseball. Klazuski, Campanella.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah.
Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve. G is here and Dave's here. Steve, Mary, and Dean Richards who joins us. The whole gang.
The whole gang is here except Steve, still pretending to be in Prague.
That's a long flight.
I think currently he is on his layover in London.
Oh, there you go.
That's what I'm hearing from our EP Vivian.
Dean, a relatively quiet weekend when it came to the Joker. There was a lot of concerns about security. There were a couple of Jokers, if you will, in Chicago who got arrested for, I don't even, this
smoking,
sound like
and
smoking
being disruptive.
And disruptive. But overall, the weekend box office returns.
That happened at Downton Abbey also. people dressing up and getting outrageous, crunching their crumpets too loudly. Would you mind being quiet, please?
But a huge box office for the Joker. That was expected.
Yeah, $93.5 million. I'm not surprised that there were no outbreaks of violence because they were so prepared with security both outside and inside the theaters. I'm not completely convinced that a movie would set off violence like that anyway. But something interesting did happen though at some theaters in Los Angeles yesterday. Several theaters, Joaquin Phoenix showed up.
Oh, how about that?
They showed the movie and then the credits started rolling. This is why you'd never leave during the credits. This is why you stay, because you never know what's going to happen either at the end of the credits or something. Sometimes something like this happens. Joaquin Phoenix walks out and thanks everybody for coming to watch the theater. Answered some questions, took some pictures. Somebody asked him, would you mind doing your Joker laugh? And he respectfully declined.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So still very, very Joaquin at
Joaquin-ish.
The moment. Yeah.
Joaquin-ish.
Yes,
yeah, still,
exactly.
Still very Joaquin-ish. You know, you can't just put a quarter in him and get him to act like a trained monkey.
Yeah. Well, dance, monkey, dance.
Yeah, right.
You know, obviously we know this from the Oscars that a lot of times the more successful movie doesn't necessarily mean that's great for Oscar consideration. But
definitely.
In this case, it seems even the bad reviews, even people who said they didn't like the Joker, they went out of their way to say Joaquin Phoenix did great.
Yeah. Well, not everybody. Some people just wanted to trash the movie. You know, there are some critics that, if you say the sky, if everyone says the sky is blue, some people will say the sky is red just to be contrarian. So not everybody did that. Not everybody liked the movie, liked the performances. But I think you can pretty much bet that Joaquin Phoenix is going to be nominated for Best Actor, depending on what else comes out this year. Right now, I'd say he's got a pretty good lock on it, but we're still pretty early in the season. I would say that Frances Conroy plays his mother in the movie. Mm-hmm. Is a pretty solid bet. That was a strong performance by her. De Niro was great in that movie, although De Niro, we haven't seen the Netflix movie The Irishman yet, but he's in that with Pacino and Joe Pesci and Martin Scorsese. So, whether or not De Niro's going to get nominated for two movies, probably is going to get nominated for The Irishman, but it's still too early. It kind of cracks me up a little bit that, a few weeks ago, people were saying, oh, Jennifer Lopez is Oscar, worthy performance in The Hustler. And then everyone saw the movie and said, not so much. it's too early to be talking about Oscar nominations.
I saw the film on Saturday, and I had the funniest thing happen to me.
Hustler or Joker?
No, Joker.
Saw both. Paid for one, snuck into the other.
Exactly. Halfway through, which is amazing. I saw it in the theater in Chicago. The sound went out.
Oh boy!
Right. So you're in the middle of it, but the film is still going, and it's a scene where Arthur is talking to his therapist.
Right.
And the sound just goes out. And it took about maybe 10 seconds, 15 seconds for someone to make a joke in the audience because it was dead silence. And everyone started to groan. And then it came back on, right? And I turned to my wife. I go, I can't believe this. She goes, no, that's intentional because no one's ever listening to the Joker. And I was like, I don't think that's intentional. I don't think that was a Todd Phillips move. So I want to confirm, since you saw the screener, that there was no sound drop in the middle of the Joker when you saw it.
I don't remember
all
that.
All right, good. Because I looked online and I'm like, I think it's technical difficulties,
yeah,
babe.
I don't remember that. Did the theater address it?
No, of course not. Say, they 10 seconds in, it came back on and everyone was fine.
I would like my money back.
Yeah, I thought about it. Don't think I didn't think about
Justin.
It. I'm like, can I get a pro? Can I get maybe 25 cents, a dollar back right. on that ticket?
Here's 15 kernels of popcorn for free.
right.
Fairly fresh.
Right. Well, the Joker obviously won the box office.
Did you like the movie, by the way?
I did. I liked it a lot. Yeah. It's such a great... I believe that... I want to go watch other Batman films. The Dark Knight, right? The Heath Ledger movie. Just because now, if you apply that backstory, even though that's not necessarily accurate in comic lore, it makes a lot more sense to who the character is and why, when Heath Ledger's just crazy to be crazy and they don't explain why. If you adapt Joaquin Phoenix's backstory, it makes a lot of sense.
It does. Yeah. There is a continuity to the Joker storyline with all of this. So in that sense, I think it definitely works. Did you feel uplifted?
Everything you said was absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, I felt like I was like Dean hit it on the head. There is it's much too realistic a portrayal And maybe where we're at in this country, be with mental illness and access to guns, that's something that has to be factored in. But I also was able to separate it because I felt, you know, I know the character and I know the Joker. Yeah. And it makes sense. He's a maniacal, chaotic villain.
I had a lot of friends go see it, and they said it was really depressing. They left feeling really depressed by it.
Yeah, that's how I was. The more I think about it, and I'm probably going to go see it again at some point. I think the biggest positive out of this whole thing is the statement that it makes about our mental health care.
Yeah, absolutely.
In America, that, you know, here's a guy who is clinically mentally ill. He's going to see a counselor and is on medication. And then suddenly it stops because the funding stops. There is nothing more real in the movie than that. Which exactly reflects what's going on in America with the way we take care of people who have mental challenges.
Yeah, and I thought that was really a great portrayal and realistic. That was the reality of the movie that I think many people probably look at and say that's what kind of freaked them out, this idea of reality. So it's a very interesting movie.
Dean, I wanted to ask you about your AIDS run walk. How did it go?
Excellent. Couldn't have been a more beautiful morning on Saturday morning, number one. So that was great. I'm told that there were like 2,000 people that showed up for the walk, which is great. You know, when I'm standing on the stage, kind of hosting the festivities, I get a sense of how the crowd is, and it was more attended than it has been in many years, which is great. And as of about 5 o'clock this morning, I got some figures in saying that we raised almost $500,000 on Saturday morning.
Oh, how about that?
So that's fantastic for people living with HIV and AIDS. The money going to the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. Met a lot of great people. I had, you know, this is nice at a charity event when you're standing around where someone walks up and says, "Hey, moron," to you. That's Steve and I love that. We love it. We love it. But the people standing around you who don't understand that this is moron entertainment.
It's out of context, right?
They look and go, "Wow." So thank you. I encourage that wherever I am. You know, wherever I am, in a grocery store, out in public, house of worship. If you want to shout out, "Hey, moron," please feel free. Go right ahead.
Dean Richards with us. We come back. Let's talk Rip Taylor, shall we? Rip Taylor died at the age of 84. We'll talk about him with Dean Richard here on More on Entertainment.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 9720.
Dean Richards, More on Entertainment, continuing here. Dean, we got to talk about Rip Taylor, the comedian.
Because you're intellectual that way?
Yeah, the comedian, and I guess you'd call him a confetti comedian, died at the age of 84. I mean, but
he's a prop. He was a prop comedian.
He was a prop comedian.
Really, if you go back and look at his act, I don't know if it translates me explaining it, but he would have just a trunk full of stuff. And then pull out a brassiere, say, for example, one with a giant cup and one with a small one. And he go, "Look, everybody, the odd couple."
He hosted shows. He was a comedian, but he excelled in the game show format and the late night talk show format.
Yeah.
Both of those in the 70s and early 80s, it was Rip Taylor overload.
$1.98 beauty show. The Gong Show was he was a regular on that. The Match Game, Password. He was on all the talk shows, all the variety shows of the 70s and 80s. But famous, when he would make his entrance, he would normally come through the audience with a giant bag of confetti. And not just sprinkle it a little bit. He would pour the confetti on people as he, you know, came into the room with his signature. He talked about having a bad toupee, and it was a bad toupee. It did look like a bird landed on his head. He would, you know, frequently during the show, he would just start adjusting his toupee. I found him hilariously funny.
He's funny.
Mustache was real, though, right?
And the mustache, I think, was real. He had a big handlebar mustache and, you know, told bad jokes. His shtick was, you know, bad jokes. And when nobody was laughing, you know, he would accost the audience for for not laughing and throw more confetti on them. So we lost. He was 84 years old, died at his home in Beverly Hills. No cause of death was given. Also this weekend, we lost arguably one of the greatest rock and roll drummers of all time,
right.
Ginger Baker. Was one of the founding members of Cream and Blind Faith. Played with all the greats. Paul McCartney this morning remembering Ginger Baker, who played on the Band on the Run album.
Wow.
And saying that he was a wild and sweet guy, had a reputation of, you know, really living the rock and roll lifestyle, of being, you know, completely crazy and unpredictable. Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers said that there was a magic in his drum playing. Steve Van Sant remembering his old friend. Saying that he was the greatest drummer of all time.
Wow, how about that? You know, I have to say, the rule of threes here, but it also, beyond just the rule of threes, you're just, you see that some of the great stars of stage and screen and music from the 70s and from the late 70s, their times are coming, unfortunately. But to see Rip Taylor and the drummer from Cream in the same day, yikes.
Yeah, it's an interesting pairing, that's for sure.
That's right.
That's for sure. Happier note, Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively announced that they've had their third baby.
Yay!
It actually happened 2 months ago. They're just now, they actually still have not made the announcement, but it has been confirmed that the baby did come a couple of months ago. They never said anything about it. Imagine these people, the nerve of them wanting some privacy.
I know.
Right. They've got their nerve with that. They have not announced the name of the baby nor the gender of the baby. Again, these people and their privacy
exactly.
Driving me crazy, but congratulations to them. They're both really wonderful people and very dedicated. Right. They already have two little girls and very dedicated.
There you go. More on entertainment with the birth and death announcements today. Dean, always great to talk to you, buddy.
All right. Have fun.
All right. That's going to... Okay, so obviously Dean Richards done. So coming up, Sister Helen Prejean will join us from talk about the Lyric Opera. That's coming up here on 720 WGN. Sister Helen Prejean on the way here. We're going to talk with her, of course, the author of Dead Man Walking, which is also an opera, which is at the Lyric Opera coming up in November. So she'll be our guest coming up right after the news here on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Around, all around. He will gather us around.
It's the Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. That's a little bit of a snippet from the opera Dead Man Walking, which is based on the work of Sister Helen Prejean. She's on the line with us. She is the author of Dead Man Walking, an eyewitness account of the death penalty in the United States, and has been a fierce death penalty advocate for years. And it is an honor to have Sister Prejean on the program. Sister Prejean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Justin. Glad to be with you.
So this is, first off, the idea of your work, and we'll get into your work, but, you know, people saw it on the big screen with the movie, and people, of course, know you through the news. To have your work sort of, celebrated on stage through the opera, how does that feel? How did that come about?
Well, Justin, all that language you're using, like celebrated and all that, the big thing about this opera and what all the art forms can do, movies and so forth, to bring people close to the reality is what I'm really happy about. The opera of Dead Man Walking is fantastic because it's live drama, and it doesn't spare the audience any of the struggles because it opens with watching the murder of two innocent people by this guy, Joe DeRoche, and he's not remorseful and he won't take responsibility, and you want to see the guy get it. And then the whole opera unfolds, which is truly my story. The aria that the Sister Helen character sings is my journey. I just came out with a book, my memoir called River of Fire, about my waking up to the importance of being a Christian and getting involved with justice. So the whole thing is about journeys unfolding, and the audience sitting there are on the biggest journey of all. It's got tremendous music in it, and it's a great drama. And so I encourage anybody within earshot of this right now. I think it opens on November 2nd by the Chicago Lyric, and I just got to be with some of the singers and all, and it's going to be terrific. Hmm.
So, Sister Prejean, what did you think the first time you saw it in its entirety?
Well, you know, the thing is, see, I've accompanied six people to execution, and I've also been with victims' families who've been promised by prosecutors if they wait 15 and 20 years and they get to watch as the person executed is going to heal them. I've seen it close up, and I know that it's all futile and all impossible. So the first time that I saw the opera, which it premiered in the San Francisco Opera in the year 2000, and when that stage curtain opened and the audience and myself, too, was brought into the story again, I'm just so glad that it can bring people close to this reality of where we as the people say we could trust our government to select the really worst people to die and that we can execute them and we can do it in a fair and just way. Yeah.
Sister Prejean, we've seen capital punishment become a political issue in the way that you'll have partisan divides on what to do with the death penalty. So when you talk about having the arts be an entree, that's a good thing in the way that they could tell the story in a way that oftentimes doesn't get told in the news or on our in our public discourse because politics gets in the way.
No, you're right, Justin, about that. And you know what? The first thing I learned from Tim Robbins when he was working on the film A Dead Man Walking is he explained the difference to me between art and propaganda. Propaganda were his own political views about the death penalty. And would he shape the story in the movie so that it would just mirror that? Art truly brings people over to both sides of an issue. And the thing about the opera of Dead Man Walking, it's not even just exactly about the death penalty. It's about the universal experience of when we're hurt or someone we love is hurt, what's going to be our journey? And following the victim's family, especially Owen Hart in the opera because his child was killed, and just seeing how he wants vengeance and he can't wait to see the person die. And then just to see the journey that he's on toward healing and wholeness. And our society is so steeped in trying to solve our problems through violence. I mean, we have violence all around, and then to have the government saying, look, when you really got a problem and somebody's really terrible, it's okay legally to kill them. It's a problem. But the human heart, the music of Jake Hagee, who's a composer, is so good in this opera. I mean, you can really sing it to its resonance. You're going to find yourself humming it afterwards. And so you have the fullness of an art form that's going to truly take you over to both sides. Because I made some bad mistakes about the victim's family in the beginning when I first took people on death row. I didn't reach out to them at all because I didn't know what to do with them. As Tim Robbins would say while we're doing the movie, the nun is in over her head. So you see me in this scene in the opera caught between the victim's families on one side singing, you don't know what it's like, and then the mother of Joseph DeRoche singing, you don't know what it's like to see your child slip through your hand. And all I'm doing is turning from one to the other and just going, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And Owen Hart says, sister, you say that a lot. That comes from you being way out of line. So I'll make mistakes, and that's part of the story, too.
Yeah, Sister Helen, it does bring up that conflict that, you know, the death penalty and capital punishment has been a dance over time politically between the correct amount of punishment and, you know, the idea the government can take somebody's life. And you'll hear, and texters are texting in saying, well, what about the consequences for violent crime? There should be consequences, these kind of things. For you and your position to have dedicated your life to the advocacy of you know, getting rid of the death penalty, what do you say to people who aren't necessarily sold that it should be abolished?
Well, the only consequences of a crime are not to kill somebody. I mean, to go to prison for long-term imprisonment or even for the rest of your life is serious consequences. I mean, that's serious. And when you absolutize something, oh, only a death for a death. but then you've lost the nuances and you've lost the humanness and the compassion in it. Of course there have to be consequences, and that's what prisons are for. But we don't have to, how did we get into this equilibrium kind of thing where we say if someone kills, the government's got to kill them? We don't apply that in any other area of criminal justice. And the other thing, you know, we're waking up about the death penalty as a country. Illinois has put it down. A lot of states have put it down. We're down now to 2% of counties where prosecutors are really actively seeking it. And part of it has been that the victims' voices have come through, too, saying, don't kill for us. All the death penalty does is puts us in a public stance, and we need to grieve, and we need to get on with our life. Yeah, remove this person from society so they can't kill again. There'll be consequences. But don't put us through this. This doesn't really heal us. And the other voices that are being raised that weren't in the beginning when we started this are the guards and the wardens who have to do the killing. And right. Now more and more they're standing up and just saying, this is, we're the ones right there. This person's absolutely defenseless, and we kill them. And it's called moral hurt. It's there's a warden, Rob McAndrews from Florida. He presided at the execution of two people. And I don't know if he still does, but he used to give public talks saying, I will be in therapy the rest of my life that I participated in the killing of a human being who was strapped down and defenseless. So more voices are being raised. We're maturing on it. We were made in the beginning when the death penalty got ramped up. We were told these people are so bad and so evil, their character, their nature, that we can't put them in prison. They'll kill again. It's like we absolutize the evil in them. And that's not true. The warden at Angola, our prison in Louisiana, told me one time, he said, sister, you know who by and large makes the best trustees here, what crime they come in here for? And I go, what? He goes, murder. They didn't know when they got up that morning they were going to murder somebody. It's not to say murder is good. Of course, it's terrible. To take the life of another human being is the worst thing you can do. But boy, when, see, like, I've watched it 6 times, 3 electrocutions, 3 lethal injections. And when you really get close to what it means to kill another human being that's been rendered defenseless, and that's where the moral wrong really comes out about the death penalty. Dead Man Walking, the opera, is the only opera with a minute and a half of silence in it. In the end, we will see this justice that many of us were hoping for, that this guy Joe DeRocher will get. And the only sound in the theater is the sound of the machines. And it's the only opera in the world with a minute and a half of silence, and we can attend to that reality.
Well, the opera Dead Man Walking is on stage at the Lyric Opera running in November, and the memoir of Sister Helen Prejean is called River of Fire, My Spiritual Journey. She's, of course, also the author of Dead Man Walking, an eyewitness account of the death penalty in the United States. Sister Prejean, a pleasure to talk with you, and thanks for taking a couple minutes out to talk with us on the Steve Cochran Show this morning.
Thank you. Happy to do it.
All right. So great to have Sister Prejean. She, amazing at 90 years old to be to having that kind of conversation, dedicating her life to the pursuit of advocacy and for abolishing the death penalty.
What an incredible storyteller.
Yeah. Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in for Steve. He's back tomorrow. G. Sookie's here. Dave Ennett. Steve Grzanich. Mary Vandeville. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Eric Williams. Chef Eric Williams will be here from Virtue. Great restaurant in Hyde Park.
Yeah, you know what? Back in July, in the New York Times article, he was listed as one of 16 black chefs changing food in America. Of course, he has Virtue Restaurant in Hyde Park. For many, many years, people knew him from MK Restaurant. Mm-hmm. And the thing that people may not know is that he does a ton of work for the community, giving back, especially to young people who need it the most.
Virtue is delicious.
It is.
Chef Williams, that's an interesting point, too, because you'll hear, you know, when you think of fine dining, and especially in Chicago, there is a racial component, only in the sense that there aren't a lot of African-American chefs.
Head chefs, absolutely. Executive chefs.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. And that a lot of black-owned restaurants are usually relegated to certain areas of the city and not necessarily to distributed evenly. But, of course, we know that, you know, Chicago is pretty segregated. But the thing that I love to remind people is that, you know, being a chef or just working in a kitchen in general is tough work. It's long hours. It doesn't matter whether you own the restaurant or you're working the line. Most everybody does a lot of hours. And but they're still always at charity events, giving back, helping with the community through work training programs, giving back somehow. And it's pretty incredible how much they carve out time despite having really, really long work weeks to give back to the community.
It's funny, too, because with Chef Williams, you're like, well, it's great he could get up and come in the morning because chefs work night. But they're up at 6
up
to set
too.
And prep. Mm-hmm. So we're actually getting in the way of his prep.
They stay late, they get up early, and there's, you know, a lot of industries that work very hard that way. But
I hope we don't have an impact on the dining tonight, right?
No, I think he's got that. He's got that. He runs a tight ship. He, trust me, he's you know, like I said, he runs there's a lot of protocol in terms of how he runs his restaurant.
Well, Chef Williams coming up. He is the chef at Virtue Restaurant in Hyde Park. Also, we'll talk a little bit about the design industry here in Chicago. This is interesting. There's a big fashion fundraiser that's coming up. You're going to be a part of it. Candace Jordan's going to be a part of it. But really about the fashion industry, the design industry in Chicago, which you don't necessarily think about because of, you know, the fact that New York City and maybe place like Los Angeles have more
New York Fashion Week, but Chicago's, especially with the all the schools that we have here, the Art Institute, lots of schools, Columbia as well, turning out a lot of great young designers. So lots going on in Chicago.
I love it.
Know about, you know, we get stuck in our bubbles and we don't think outside our little bubbles, and it's great to discover new things about our fair city.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's that all coming up in the 9 o'clock hour as we join CLTV here on 720 WGN. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on 720 WGN. All right, coming up, Chef Williams will join us from Virtue, and we'll also talk. Candace Jordan will be here to talk about a big event coming up this week, where G is going to be a part of it as well. That's all coming up on the Steve Cochran Show. I'm not sure if we can fit in any time, Dave, to talk about the Bears. The one area that we did not talk about with Hamp was that John Gruden, after the game, mocked Club Dub.
Yep.
He went out of his way to point out that the Bears were not going to have their dance party, which is now becoming kind of a famous thing in the country.
Well, the one thing is that I guess if you have a dance party when you win and you don't win, the team that beat you is going to have a little fun with it.
They've opened themselves up to that, right?
I can't really. I know people are upset about it. I can't get all that bet out of shape. I think the Bears have bigger problems than what John Gruden's doing over in the Oakland locker room.
No, I think if he's going to make fun of Club Dub, we need to take it personal.
let's do that.
They were getting, you know, maybe this is good. Maybe they need to take a week off from planning their dance moves and things like that and focus on football,
if
right?
They get inspiration from that, go for it, right?
Gruden needs to stay out of Bears business.
Yeah, exactly. Stay out of Bears business. Stay out of Bears business. All right. It's the Steve Cochran Show rolling along here on 720 WGN. Hey, Steve. It's the Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman filling in for Steve. He is back tomorrow. Say hi to CLTV, everybody. Joining us on the broadcast here on 720 WGN. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, we're going to talk with Chicago Tribune columnist and media personality Candace Jordan about Rev Up and the fashion show that's coming up this week, I believe, here in Chicago. So we'll talk about that. But first...
Yeah, we've got Chef Eric Williams right with us in studio. In case you don't know who he is an incredible chef, worked for many years at MK Restaurant, which is now closed, and now has his own restaurant in Hyde Park by the name of Virtue. Everyone should go check it out. And back in July, in a New York Times article, he was listed as one of 16 black chefs changing food in America. And Chef Eric, just in case people don't know your story, if you could briefly say, I mean, you were born here, and a little bit about your background.
First, great morning, everyone. Thanks so much for having me on. So I worked for 20 years, which is unheard of, at MK Restaurant before we finally came to a close. And I spent the next year, year and a half, working on this project. And we're really, really excited about the opening of Virtue and all of the press and notoriety that it's gotten in such a short time.
And before we talk about your new venture, I just want to explain that you've never forgotten where you've come from. You've always found a way to give back despite all of your success.
Oh, it's hard for me to forget where I come from. I actually still live in the same neighborhood that I invest in. So, yes.
Can you tell us about the neighborhood?
Yeah, I live in Lawndale, and it's one of Chicago's toughest neighborhoods. And I have a very simple philosophy, and that is if you take all of the people out of the community that have resources, then you deplete the neighborhood of the resources.
See, Justin, yeah. Some people, they get successful, they forget. He's never forgotten. He has so many work training programs. He's helped so many youth. You've fed so many people that didn't have a hot meal. You've done incredible work.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Chef, we talked right before you came on just about the idea that in Chicago, when you look at executive chefs and the top chefs, it can be colorblind. I mean, or it can be, they have a color problem where it's all white. Everyone across the board. There are rarely any black chefs that are at the top of restaurants. Why do you think that is in Chicago?
I mean, it's the same epidemic across the country. The reality is African-Americans, we were the chefs and the butlers and all things service-oriented for many, many years because we were the labor force. And based on the kind of conditions surrounding that labor, African-Americans ran from it as fast as they possibly could. Now we're seeing an emergence of African-American talent and chefs reclaiming that space. And that's part of what we try to capture at Virtue. The South has many aspects and many facets. And the truth is, what we generally talk about when we talk about African-Americans cooking, we talk a lot about soul food.
Right.
And that's the food, the rustic form of food that we cook for one another. But we very rarely talk about the food that we cooked everywhere else, in the house, on the trains, as train porters, and so many other facets of what we did in so many other spaces.
Hmm. And the cuisine, when you talk about the cuisine of Virtue and it being a Southern style, where does that come from? Is that something that you love, that you're passionate about, or are you the kind of chef that's like, we're going to do that style here, and then I'll open up an Italian place somewhere else, a steakhouse downtown? Where's your passion come from when it comes to food?
Well, I'm inspired by food, first and foremost. My training is in traditional French and Italian. But Virtue was inspired by a trip to the South and many, many questions and then a deep dive into history. And what I came out with, and I continue to study it, is that we separate the South as if it's an island. So New Orleans cuisine feels like one thing, and then food that's in Mississippi feels like something else. And then we forget, right, that there's this connection with Mexico. Because as slaves traveled and fled from America, Mexico was one of the first places that received us. And so then all of a sudden it makes sense that there are tamales called Mississippi tamales that are in the Delta, right? Because there's this rich food exchange. And many of the ingredients that are in the South happen by way of a food exchange. We get pork through Spain. We get these rich dishes like jambalaya that feel similar to jollof from Africa, but also very similar to paella from Spain, right? And I mean, hence the fact Spain did own New Orleans at one point, right?
Right.
And so I think you just keep having this continuum of an argument, right, that as a chef or as a creative, you start to try to define that thing, you know, that space in layers, right? And so that's really where the inspiration comes from in cooking. Do we use rice today or do we use grits? In the South, you know, if you eat rice, then you're from one place. If you eat grits, you're from somewhere else. In Chicago, you could eat both, right? And so we just take a contemporary approach. We want the food to feel good. We want the food to look good. We don't want it to be rustic. I'm not trying to reproduce everything my grandmother cooked as I grew up. But I must say that I'm very informed by that space through her practice.
You know, it's interesting with the Great Migration coming from the South to Chicago, that obviously the traditional cuisine came with people who came from Mississippi, from Alabama, from New Orleans. Do you see the outgrowth of that in Chicago today? I mean, do you see the kind of food that came from the South being put on plates in Chicago, specifically rooting back to that Great Migration?
I see a lot of the same. I feel like African-American cuisine or soul food hasn't really evolved. And that gives us place because we want to, I mean, we're chefs. So we look at food in a very progressive way and we want it to be approachable to people, but we also want to push the standard.
Well, we've talked a little bit about Chef's background, but I can't wait to talk about his new venture. And I think, are we going to take a little break first?
We'll take a break here. Chef Eric Williams from Virtue in studio with us today on the Steve Cochran Show. Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. Justin Poffin in for Steve. He's back tomorrow. G is here. Dave, Steve, Mary, and Chef Eric Williams from Virtue in Hyde Park. We're talking about the restaurant and some other things that the chef's up to. But before we move on to what you have coming up, Virtue is high-end soul food, and it's a Southern cuisine. For people who don't know what soul food is, what are the characteristics, or what is the food and the ingredients that sort of you would put forward?
So first, if we just defined soul food, it's the best of country cooking or the best of scrap cookery, and so you find ingredients like collard greens, a lot of off parts that have been smoked. It's not abnormal for anyone in a country to use the entirety of an animal, but it's really highlighted, and it's highlighted well because those ingredients are used to season. And soul food cooking, right? So you're using things like salt pork and turkey tails and pig feet, and things that sometimes when people hear them, they would cringe, but if they taste the end result without knowing what it took to get to that space, they're like, oh my God, how'd you do that?
Yeah.
But we don't really fashion ourselves as fine dining. I'm a casual cook. And that's who I am at heart. I spend a lot of time in fine dining. What we try to do is give placement to food and allow the food to speak. And then we try to work really, really hard on allowing our service and our hospitality to speak. And so it could feel like it's fine dining, but a one-inch cut pork chop would never be on anybody's menu that's doing fine dining.
Right, right. Yeah, but there's something to be said, though, and the juxtaposition, I think that's why people really love Virtue, is there is this contrast between the kind of food that's being served usually is going to be more in a cafeteria setting, or it's going to be almost a mom-and-pop storefront kind of vibe. Virtue is much more of a restaurant that's going to be in the same category as what you find in the, you know, downtown, River North, those kind of places, but it's in Hyde Park serving that food. Obviously, really well done food.
Well,
but
thank you.
But the point being that's kind of, I think, why people love Virtue is that contrast.
I think it is elevated in the sense that it is in terms of the hospitality and the type of care and the plating, the presentation. It is pretty incredible. I think you're getting a lot of bang for your buck when you dine at Virtue, but I also think you're getting the level of care that you might see usually in fine dining, which speaks to you and sort of the quality, the standard that you've set there.
Well, all I can say is thank you, because we're working at it every day, and as everyone knows, the restaurant business is really
tough. It's really tough, yeah. And some of those dishes, one in particular I think might change people's minds about offcuts is the gizzards plate. Can you describe a little bit about that? It's delicious.
So I grew up hating gizzards, and that's part of the challenge of a chef, right? How do you recreate, or how do you give placement to something that in a lot of instances you wouldn't readily embrace, because I represent a demographic. Everyone that eats represents a demographic of people, right? And so the only time I liked gizzards is when my mom put them in gravy. Like, I crave giblet gravy. And so I had to think about how gizzards could be tender and crunchy all at the same time.
Right.
And, you know, like the dirty rice that's at the bottom, that has more of a finer finish, because we make a puree and fold it into the rice. So you don't really see that it's dirty rice if you look straight at it. But the complexity of flavor is there. And it has more to do with the fact that we want to clean up a lot of the dishes. Like, we don't want to just take gizzards and serve them the way they used to be served, A. B, we want someone to bite into them and say, wow, this is the best gizzard I've ever had. And if it's not the best gizzard, it needs to be in the top three.
You can't even tell it's a gizzard. And if you're turned off by that idea, trust me, your mind will be changed if you try it. But right. They also have shrimp and salmon and beef short ribs and gumbo. So anyway, I can get carried away. Go to Virtue Restaurant in Hyde Park. But we want to hear about your new adventure. And with Time Out Food Hall that's coming up. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, so I'm really, really excited. Time Out Magazine, we worked on me being in the food hall for some time, trying to figure out, like, what made sense. And hopefully you can hear this when I talk. I'm really, really passionate about trying to figure out what makes sense and what we can do to improve both the optics and the experience of our city, because I love Chicago. And so with that being said, Time Out took this very ambitious project underway, and it's Time Out Cultural Center. And so what better way to add culture to a cultural center than to just, you know, really, really infuse it with a ton of culture? And so what I'm going to do and what I've proposed to them is I'm going to expose inner city kids that otherwise might not make it to Time Out Market, because a lot of these kids will come from areas that are considered food deserts, places where kids, it's kind of a trek for them to leave Chicago's South Side or Chicago's West Side to end up, you know, in this incubator that's full of chefs and serving great food. And so what we found, I work with a program more frequently by the name of Embark. And Embark has done the data. I can't take any credit for it. And what they found is the more that we expose young people, the better results we get. So we want to believe that we need to over-police and we need to do all these other things to solve this problem. But it's as simple as letting kids see things that they ordinarily would not see in their own communities.
And so, you know, Time Out, there's going to be a food hall and there's going to be a lot that goes into
Fulton Market. So there'll be food stalls
there. But you're right, this is a raging trend when it comes to food halls. But it's very significant, or it seems to only play to one certain set of population, and that might be the young person who's looking to, who might be considered themselves a foodie. So you're right in the sense that bringing other people in who wouldn't necessarily be the demographic has to be good.
Yeah, and what are you going to be doing for the kids that you're bringing in?
So,
you'll be doing, like, cooking demos, you said?
I won't tell everything I'm going to do.
Okay, gotcha.
But we will start with activating the space. I plan to kick off the opportunity for kids to sit through a demo and be exposed to food and ingredients in a way that we think is going to be exciting and inspirational. But I must say, if I just walked 30 kids from high school through the place, where do kids get to see 18 chefs in a space cooking?
Right.
Right? We see a lot of exposure of chefs via television, but you don't get to see, you know, 18 of them, and you don't get to see what's happening in real time, right? Because a lot of it is staged. And so that alone is mind-blowing for the average person.
Yeah. Chef Williams, great to have you here. And go check out Virtue down in Hyde Park, and you'll be part of the Time Out Food Hall, which is coming to Chicago in the near future. Chef Williams, a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much.
There you go. Chef Eric Williams from Virtue on the Steve Cochran Show. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll talk a little fashion. How about that? Here on the 720 WGN. All right, coming up, Chicago Tribune columnist Candace Jordan will be here. Talk about an event that's coming up, a fashion show. It's right up Super Joe's alley.
Yeah,
he's
buddy.
He's a big fashion guy. But we're going to talk about the design industry in town, an area that doesn't get as much attention as some of the other industries, of course. But much is happening there when it comes to fashion design and just the overall world of looking good. That's something that we all...
Which comes easy to some of us, you know what I'm saying?
Like me?
Well, I don't know about that. Yeah.
It does. When I was thinking of this segment, I was like, it's a Super Joe segment. He'll be taking a lead on this one, of course. It's okay. But before we do that, let's find out what's happening in the news. Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. He is back from Prague tomorrow. It's going to be some jet lag. I don't feel good for you guys. You're gonna be dealing with that, right?
What are you trying to suggest?
No, he's gonna come in. He'll be chirp.
He'll be fine.
Cheery. He'll be ready to run.
It's Wednesday. I'm worried about. Yeah. Usually it takes a day.
So smart, Dave.
Well, looking forward. Steve Cochran back tomorrow here on 720 WGN. All right, let's talk. I want to talk design industry and fashion, because there's an event coming up on Thursday called Rev Up, which is an annual fashion show which is at the Perillo Rolls Royce, which is the
I plan to buy a Rolls Royce
amazing car dealership on the north side of right off of Mag Mile. It's really a fundraiser for the apparel industry board and the design industry in general. And in studio with us, Lauren Lyne, who's the president of the apparel industry board, and also who is being honored this year, Candace Jordan, longtime columnist and media personality in town and a guest on this program. Yeah. Candace, great to see you.
Great to
Lauren,
be here.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks
so,
for having me.
So first off, let's get right into the Apparel Industry Board. Where does this come from? What's the origins of the board and essentially the idea of celebrating the design industry here in town?
Well, AIBI has been around for 32 years. We're actually the only official organization in Illinois that supports Chicago designers and the sewn products industry as a whole. And what that means is you could be designing a couture gown, such as myself or Elda De La Rosa, or you could be sewing a work glove, and we support you from the beginning of your ideas to teaching you to sew, having events like this on the runway, and honoring people such as wonderful Candace, who wears our clothes all the time, and putting your things on the runway so that people actually buy them, which, you know, obviously is what we want to happen.
Candace, I'm not surprised at all that you are involved with AIBI, because when I think of one of the most fashionable people in the city and surrounding the city, it's you. I mean, tell me, how did this come about?
Well, it came about because I've always been a champion of all local fashions and designers, and I've always been a patron of local designers. I mean, I firmly believe that we are not the second city. We're the first city when it comes to fashion.
Really?
You know, yeah, I really do. I mean, we have designers here, and they're unsung heroes. That's the problem. And this is why this show is so important, to highlight and put a spotlight on this local talent. I mean, we have designers that are just as good as anybody that's working the New York Fashion Week, and it's just a matter of exposure. And so that's what they are. Apparel Industry Board does best, and that's what this event is going to do. So that's why I'm so excited.
Lauren, it's interesting because you automatically go to New York City when you think of design and the design industry, or even sewn work when you think of the Garment District or other places in New York. Is that just marketing on their end? Have they done a better job than maybe Chicago has in saying this is a vibrant part of what we do in this city, especially since there's a lot that's happening here in town?
I would say it is a lot of marketing, and you know, there is a lot more people in New York, so someone such as myself and other designers have probably all thought of going to New York, and I actually started my career there, but what I found, and what many of us have found, is that Chicago is a friendlier, warmer place. We have the Candace Jordans, the Cheryl Bodines of the world, who are not afraid to step out of black, even though both of us have black, with color a little bit on today, and are really more expressive in their fashions. So, yes, New York is fabulous with the sewers and seamers, but we're Chicago. We are not trying to be New York. We are the Midwest. We're going to be a little bit more independent. We're working hard. We need functional clothes. Today I'm getting into an Uber and my dress was flying, and I'm thinking,
I need something a little roomier.
Yes,
because I like
exactly.
to eat, because Chicagoans enjoy eating.
Thank you.
Town.
So, yeah, so we live here because we can live and work and raise a family here, such as myself, but also be a little bit maybe more creative in how we market, just because it is a smaller pool. But then we don't have to be maybe as big as a fish to be noticed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Candace, you are out and about. I mean, you have your wonderful column for the Tribune, but you are out and about everywhere, and you're always wearing something fabulous. How do you have this incredible wardrobe? Well, you what know, is your it, the keys to success for dressing well?
It used to be so much easier before social media, but now your photos are everywhere, and so you can't wear the same outfit two nights in a row like I used to, or maybe even three for all that matter. But it's for me, it's all about the accessories. I mean, you know, I'll wear something very simple and just pump it up with a, you know, something sparkly or something casual, you know, and that's really how the key to changing up a wardrobe.
And I know you mix and match, like price points even, right? You don't
100%.
Always.
100%.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I was at Neiman's yesterday, and there was a girlfriend of mine that was there, and she's, oh, God, Candace, I love that sweater you've gone on. I said it was $40 at Macy's, and her salesperson went into a heart attack mode, didn't want me to mention that because she's trying to sell her this stuff. But there's a place for high and low, and I think when you mix it, it's even more creative.
Yeah. The event is called Rev Up, and I want to hear all about it. It's coming up on Thursday. And
I'm emceeing it, by the way.
Yes. She is emceeing.
And what are you? Thank you. What are you so going to be lucky. Awarded with? What is this? This is incredible.
It's the Chicago Icon Fashion Award, I think.
You
Icon.
Are
Ooh, look
an
at
icon.
That word, Icon.
All right,
yeah.
We'll hear all about Rev Up coming up here right after we take a quick break. Candace Jordan in studio, Lauren Lyon, who's the president of the Apparel Industry Board Incorporated, and we'll talk more about the event, which is coming up on Thursday. Back here on the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. In studio with us as we talk about Rev Up, which is the annual fashion show that's taking place on Thursday. Candace Jordan, who will be honored at the event at Rev Up. And then also Lauren Lyon, who's the president of the AIBI and a designer herself. You know, it's a runway show mm-hmm. on Thursday.
Right.
Always fun. Do you have tips on the best way to walk? Or?
Oh, listen, it's going to be a runway show like none other. We're spotlighting 9 different local designers. Lauren is showcasing a brand new collection of her own that's inspired by the city of Chicago. We're going to have local celebrities, local notables walking the runway. And I think one of the most important aspects of this event is that they award the Stanley Paul Raylene Middleman Scholarship Foundation check to one of the top designers. And so it's going to be a secret and surprise who's going to win this prestigious award. I think the check's for like $5,000.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's a really big deal. It's going to be at Perillo Rolls Royce. Tickets are still available at AIBI.com. Pardon the plug.
And right. I'll be there too, trying to MC, trying to keep all these designers and fashionistas
walking,
in line.
Are you walking the
oh,
runway?
Never,
we wish she would.
No, I couldn't.
Come on, G.
No. We asked her. She
are
won't
you kidding?
Do it.
Why?
Oh, my God. Trip. It'd be
she
it'd be
won't.
Awkward.
Next She'd be year. Spectacular.
Next year.
Yeah, next year.
Oh, next my goodness.
Year. Get the whole
well,
thing.
This is about you. See how she likes to turn this? Okay.
I feel like we have 3 days till Thursday.
Oh, my goodness.
We can turn G into a runway
superstar. Could she ride a Rolls Royce down the runway?
That's what we want.
That would be amazing.
That's what we want. And then we're going to give her a Rolls Royce for her appearance.
Back
there.
To you, young lady. How do you feel about being awarded this honor? How are you feeling?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, this came about in such a darling manner. And Marcia Brenner, who was the long, long time executive director of the Apparel Industry Board and was a very good friend of mine, she was a rough customer. She told you like it was. So, you know, you went back and forth with the friendship. But she asked me in May to come to lunch with her and Amber Campos, who is now the executive director. For lunch, we went to La Colonial, and that's when she popped this surprise mm-hmm. on me and asked me if I would do it and consider it, and I was completely blown away. It was such an honor. Of course, I said yes. I mean, it was so special. And then a month later, Marcia had passed. And so, you know, for her to have asked me to do this personally really meant a lot to me. And so we're going to honor her and pay tribute to her at the event as well. And so it's going to be a real celebration of not just Chicago designers, but the whole industry in Chicago and who made it important.
Correct. And what I love about this, I know it sounds super fancy. It's the Rolls Royce. It's in the Gold Coast. But, Lauren, you're saying that the proceeds really do help. And AIBI really does help emerging designers just starting out, right?
Absolutely. That's no joke. The $5,000 scholarship will be given to a student designer, not one of us that's on the runway, but you will also see those designs that have been voted on by professionals, and it will be awarded that night, and that helps them towards their education in fashion school.
Because the idea is also we want to keep these designers in Chicago,
exactly.
In the Chicago area. We don't want them to move away.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would totally agree, and that's why our agency exists, and we're a kind of a one-of-a-kind deal in the nation, and We love it. Mm-hmm. I've been the president the last 4 years, and I've followed after Victor Skrobnesky, and that's kind of large shoes to fill. And I bet they've kept me on. Maybe no one else wants to do it, but I feel very flattered that I'm still here as the president and as a Chicago
designer. Well, we're getting a lot of texts in right now, most of them about G walking the runway.
Nobody wants to see that.
Everybody wants to see it.
Afterwards, right here in the
hallway. We're going to convince her for next year.
Yep. Sounds like a video. I want to see the 630 does ask the question, though. What education path do you recommend for a young person that wants to be a designer?
Well, I would say start as early as you can. I know I myself was, designing things out of little swatches when I was 6. Obviously, a lot of us know right away what we want to do. Some of us don't. But as far as education, if you have a high school that has any sewing experience, anything in art, that is a start. And I would also just say be aware to all pop culture, always, every magazine, every TV, this radio show, everything, because of social media, influences you. So be open to everything. That's where you're going to be as far as getting your inspiration. And then as far as a formal education, fashion schools are great. We've got some great ones here, Columbia, the Art Institute, fantastic. If you, for some reason you have to go out of state, obviously there's Parsons or FIT, but we've got great little jewels here. Mm-hmm. And one of the best things, though, is intern. Get with a designer such as myself, a Rebellion, Mark Roscoe. I know we all take on interns, whether it's paid, non-paid. Just learn, and be open. And, there's so many ways to sew, whether it's draping, tailoring. By being an intern, you're going to find out what you love, what you don't love. Just immerse yourself. Travel is also very good. Get overseas any way you can and see what's going on. Even work for a design house, work for Galliano. That's something I didn't do, but that doesn't mean I won't. there's still time.
There's still time.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, congratulations,
Candace. Well, can I just mention our designers quickly? So the designers that are going to be featured is Ann Everett Designs, Lauren Line, right here, Peach Carr, who is a Project Runway finalist, Elda De La Rosa Couture, Mark Roscoe, Rebellion, Model Atelier, and Tamara Ellingson. So we have a packed house and a packed runway.
And you can get tickets at?
AIBI.com. And they're at all levels, starting at $75.
Okay, this October 10th.
Thursday, October 10th.
There you go. Candace Jordan will be honored. Lauren Line is the president of the AIBI, and if you come out, you'll see G, who will be emceeing the event, which is Thursday, October 10th at Perillo Rolls Royce right there in the Gold Coast. I can't thank you enough for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us. We'll see you
at the show.
There you go. The news is next from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on 720 WGN. You just can't go wrong with softball music as we wrap up here on the Steve Cochran Show. Bill and Wendy are next. I got to go home and start
prepping,
stretching,
lifting weights. I don't know what you do like in 16 in softball, eating Italian beef sandwiches. I'm not sure what you're supposed to do to get ready. But the WGN Radio Team Championship tonight in Forest Park. Come out and watch it. It's open to the public, free, and we're playing the Chicago Reader, and we're going to have a big celebration, national anthem.
Good luck on this. I can't believe you guys. You can get in for free to see this. I mean, I would pay big bucks to come watch you guys.
I don't know. It's going to be great. I think we have a chance to win, but I know the Chicago Reader team is really tough. So, we're just taking it one softball slow pitch at a time.
That's all you can do, Justin.
Is there a trophy?
There is a trophy.
Okay.
It's the Cup League. So, it's the Irv Cupsinet Cup League. The Cup. There's a Cup.
Oh. So, it's an award that'll never pay for dinner.
So,
are you proud of yourself?
Allegedly.
What do you guys got on the program today?
We have a very loyal listener who celebrated a birthday, and I made a horrible mistake in regards to that birthday. So we'll fix it. It'll be fixed.
Was it an on-air mistake?
Yeah. Well, sort of. Yeah.
Or you just omitted it. You were supposed to do it, and you didn't.
Yeah, that might be a little closer.
Along those lines, yes. So we're going to give her the Irv Cups
and a trophy. That should be your thing where you make up, you give birthday shout outs later.
Yeah, after the birthday's over.
That could be our thing.
That could be your thing.
All right.
Bill and Wendy up next here on the Steve Cochran Show, or on WGN, the Steve Cochran Show, wrapping up here. Bill and Wendy next.
You're thinking about softball.
WGN. Go GN.